Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. It's, by the way, it's a podcast if you're new to this format. So, as many of you may know, we used to do a call-in show on LRN.FM and Ustream, but it was something that I, for now anyway, put on hold because we didn't have enough listeners and it was too much work for the amount of reward that I was getting from it. Maybe it's something we'll revive in the future. In the meantime, maybe you don't know this. Since I moved to Keene in January, I've been invited to be one of the co-hosts of a very popular call-in show called Free Talk Live. I'm on every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Many of you are saying, wait a minute, today is Wednesday. That's right. So, tonight, you can check me out at cam.freetalklive.com, or you can just go to their website and look at the streaming options if you want audio only. They're also on like 140 radio stations, so, you know, your car should come with an AM radio. I haven't bought a new car in a while. Should come with an AM radio, should have presets, so you could also look at all their station options and maybe just save one of them. And you could enjoy us during your commute. If you've never heard Free Talk Live, I recommend checking it out. And I also recommend sharing it with other people who are new, maybe just dipping their little piggies into these ideas. Free Talk Live is a good place to start. So this show is supposed to be based on an article that I found on Reason.com about some new research into the effects of homework. The conversation just went in so many different school and education-related directions. It was just me and Ian. Mark was on vacation. And I thought it was something that many of you might enjoy. We had some good participation with listeners. And that's what you're going to hear today. But I'm going to read the article in its entirety first. And then I'll get into my conversation with Ian and some Free Talk Live listeners. Folks, spring is here. I can feel it in the air. I just got back from my vacation in Arizona. I have to say that I'm now so relaxed, but on the other hand, so energized. It's like there's this calm throughout my being, but this tingle in my loins. Is that offensive? Can someone in the control room look up loins for me? Oh, I'm being told we don't have a control room. Okay, so before we start with the Reason article, I do have a couple of announcements that I want to deal with. This paper that I'm shuffling is purely for effect. I'm reading them off Evernote. The first one is I'm very sorry to the thousands of people who downloaded the last show with an audio glitch, the self-esteem, living purposefully show. That problem has been fixed. If you want a clean version, it is up either on Podomatic or on the website. Announcement number two, I have created a Facebook group for the School Sucks Project. The Facebook fan pages are not great, so if you want to be more interactive, find the School Sucks Project group on Facebook. Item number three, on the top of the page right now at schoolsucksproject.com, you can get my audio with Ernest Hancock. I was on his show, Declare Your Independence, and wow, what an experience. Ernie is such a great man. He had me on for hours two and three, and then we did a bonus show, and I'm trying to obtain that audio, and that will probably go to the AV Club, which brings me to item number four. Somebody signed up for the AV Club using the name Vendor Advantage. When you sign up, I always send an email encouraging people to make an account so they can access all of the bonus content, and it got sent back to me, and it's the only correspondence I have. So if you signed up with that name, Vendor Advantage, please contact me, Brett, at Edulution. That's edu-lu-tion.com. And we'll get that straightened out and we'll get you upgraded. So here we go with Reason.com, title of this article that we're going to attempt to discuss on Free Talk Live. We really don't get too far into it. Homework can turn your kid into a stressed out wreck, researchers say. Sending your kid to school can be frustrating as hell. Top-down mandates and the reality that your kid is just one among a roomful can restrict your options, even when you're lucky enough to have options from which to pick. Despite the variety of public, private, and charter schools near me, all of the parents I know complain that their kids have too much damned homework. Now, when we complain to teachers and administrators, we'll be armed with research suggesting that professional educators in quotes, I'm adding the quotes, are trying to turn our kids into socially stunted weirdos. Yeah, really, a study published last year in the Journal of Experimental Education takes a dim view on the heavy workloads under which high school kids in 10 high-performing schools in upper-middle-class communities stagger. Results indicated that students in these schools average more than 3 hours of homework per week, you ask? No, per night. Students who did more hours of homework experienced greater behavioral engagement in school, but also more academic stress, physical health problems, and lack of balance in their lives. Which is to say, even if you think homework is a good thing, there's a limit. More is not better, say researchers from Stanford University, Lewis and Clark College, and Villanova University. The communities the researchers focus on are more prosperous than the country as a whole, with median household income over $90,000 and 93% of students going on to college. They're also the sort of communities that would be most likely to emphasize and support academic success. Where their schools have gone is where many educators pushing heavier homework loads and higher standards around the country say they want to follow. Now, one of the callers that we're going to take during the show is a high school student, and he said he lives in Connecticut, and I asked him where. And the reason for that question, I was just recalling some of my experience working in the greater Boston area with some very stressed out students in some very wealthy communities. It's part of the culture there, the keeping up with the Joneses thing. And Connecticut has a lot of really wealthy areas as well. So it was, you know, that paragraph that I just read that relates to that question that you'll ultimately hear me ask during the show. The Stanford News summarizes the researchers' findings. So the first one, greater stress. 56% of the students considered homework a primary source of stress, according to the survey data. 43% viewed tests as a primary stressor, while 33% put the pressure to get good grades in that category. Less than 1% of the students said homework was not a stressor. Number two, reductions in health. In their open-ended answers, many students said their homework load led to sleep deprivation and other health problems. The researchers asked students whether they experienced health issues such as headaches, exhaustion, sleep deprivation, weight loss, and stomach problems. And number three, less time for friends, family, and extracurricular pursuits. Both the survey data and student responses indicate that spending too much time on homework meant that students were, quote, not meeting their developmental needs or cultivating other critical life skills while they're in school, according to the researchers. Students were more likely to drop activities, not see friends or families, and not pursue hobbies they enjoy. 2 hours of homework is at the high end of what high school students should be doing every day. The researchers report, disagree. Now, I'm not a professional educational researcher, but I'm going to assert that that is also too much. I'm calculating school at 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, 35 hours right there, plus 14 hours devoted to homework is 49 hours, 49/169 of an adolescent's week. Whoops, I just used a made-up word. Of a teenager's week is related to school, and that doesn't even count commutes, right? So if we add commuting into that, I mean, even if their commutes are all done in, let's say, 10 hours to and from, now we're at like a third of the week is devoted to school. That's, and when we're talking about the question of balance in life, forget it. All right, so the author continues, my 8-year-old son is younger than the researcher's subjects, and he's not yet, and never, as far as I'm concerned, carrying a daily 3-hour homework load. But he's already freaking out over what strikes me as excessive take-home assignments. Talking down to a third grader because he's overworked is a bizarre experience, but all too common among families we know in a community that's not exactly an academic pressure cooker. It looks like it's time for another chat with Teacher and Company. The goals, to explain once again, are healthy, educated, well-adjusted human beings. Stressed out basket cases, not so much. You know who seems pretty happy and well-balanced? My nephew. He's being homeschooled. The end. So I know this was a pretty simple read. It generates a lot of great conversation, which is why I wanted to include this in the podcast feed. But it is nice that there is some activity, you know, with these educational researchers starting to express concerns and raise awareness about some of the issues that were troubling me as early as 2006 when I was a fresh-faced tutor in some very competitive environments in the greater Boston area. You know, it's unfortunate, I have to admit. When I was new to that, being new is hard, right? Being new at something, because you're like, wait a minute, what? Why? And you just, you know, I just said, oh, well, boy, it's really competitive down here. These kids look stressed. It's a really high demand for the kind of work that I was doing related to SATs, boosting grades, college essay writing. And those were the things I used to do. So, you know, I'm happy to see this article. I hope the word spreads. We'll see. So here we go with Free Talk Live from March 12, 2014. Thanks, everyone.
This is Free Talk Live, and we will take your calls about anything you want here toll-free. 855-450-FREE is the Pro XPN toll-free line. That's 855-450-3733. The Weed Tonight includes me, Ian.
And Brett.
Brett is here courtesy of the School Sucks Project. And Brett, tonight you brought something to the table that I think a lot of people are going to be able to relate to. That is, if they went to a kind of a Prussian-based style school system.
Yeah.
Topic about homework.
Absolutely. You want to lead off with that?
Let's jump right in.
Because
into
I think
that.
there might be some good practical value for, obviously, there's a lot of people in the audience who have to send their kids to public school.
Or maybe they're still in school. We do have some younger listeners as well.
Yeah, and private school and charter school. They all have agreed on this homework thing, that's a good idea.
It's fairly ubiquitous.
Yeah, that's what the story is about tonight. Homework can turn your kid into a stressed out wreck, researchers say.
All right.
So that's not just me, the host of some anti-school podcast, saying that. Researchers are saying it. It's from Reason.com. The author is J.D. Tussile, I'm guessing.
I don't know how you're pronouncing it.
Yeah, I'm guessing on Tussile? The pronunciation. Yeah, Tussile, that sounds right. Sending your kid to school can be frustrating as hell. Top-down mandates and the reality that your child is just one among a roomful can restrict your options, even when you're lucky enough to have options from which to pick. Despite the variety of public, private, and charter schools near me, all of the parents I know complain that their kids have too much damn homework. Now, when we complain to teachers and administrators, we'll be armed with research suggesting that professional educators are trying to turn our kids into socially stunted weirdos.
Well, I don't think that's their intention, right? I mean, the educators, I think, genuinely want to help kids learn, and this is the way it's always been done, so load them up with homework.
You know, that's actually an interesting idea right there. That it all, because I've said that on my show so many times. You know, educators, they have the best of intentions. You know,
I believe that,
and they're kind of sucked into this. You know, they get into this profession because they want to help kids. Mm. And I remember I said it to my mom one time. My mom was a teacher from like the early 70s until when I was born. She taught in an inner city school in Pennsylvania, outside Philadelphia, and she said, it's not why I got into teaching.
Really?
She said, when I went to see the career counselor in high school, they said, you're a woman, so you can be secretary, a nurse, or a teacher. And that was you know, 1960s. So obviously that's not the case today anymore. But you have to think that over the course of the 20th century, a lot of people were just kind of relegated to teaching because they were female.
And is that where homework came from?
Well, I think that it just speaks to the not all teachers enter the profession with, oh, I can't wait to make a difference for kids. And I remember when I was a young professional, I was working in a private school. A lot of people were urging a lot of us to go and work for the government. They said, go get a government job. You know, the benefits are insane.
And pay is better, too.
Yeah,
right?
And the pay is better. So it wasn't about making a difference. It was like people know that it's a well-paying, you know, high-benefited job. And
that's
attracts a lot of people, too. Now, I think there are I would still say that a majority of people go into school for good intentions, and they kind of become victims of the system too, just like the kids do. But I've had to kind of back away, you know, hearing this anecdote from my mom and looking into it a little more after that, from this idea that everybody is going there with the best of intentions.
I certainly would agree that not everyone is. Mm-hmm. There's obviously some people who are seeking a sweet job with great bennies.
Yeah.
Or there are some who might feel like they're not qualified for anything else. You know, those who can do, those who can't teach, the old saying.
Yeah.
So there are probably some who saw it as an easy career path. But most of them, when you ask them, in my experience, will say they wanted to have
kids.
Oh,
boy. Yes, they certainly will. And you know, they don't realize... I remember there was some budget issues in New Hampshire a couple years ago, and we took some cameras up to Concord, Jason Talley and I, and a few other people. And we were shooting some footage, and I confronted I think she was an elementary school teacher. And I felt so bad for her, because she had no idea, you know, what was going on with the budget. She didn't understand all that. None of that had ever been explained to them. A lot of the teachers had been made to feel like they were victims. And she's like, I have three kids. I have, you know, health insurance that I need to get. I don't know any other way that would be possible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're kind of sucked in and made into dependents. And I mean, you saw it. You attended meetings recently here in Keene for school board and school budget related matters.
Right. I mean, they become a political football, essentially, at that point. Not only are they dependent on the system, but they're also being used by the people in that system. And some of them use the system. I mean, some of them do know what's going on, and they're very interested in increasing the benefits and things like that. But yeah, I can see that others who were just in the kind of the realm to teach, then all of a sudden discover all this political play that is going around, happening constantly around them, whether it's budgets or contracts and unions. And there's a lot of politics that goes on there. And that's got to be, for some of them, it has to be distasteful.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, too, that I noticed from what just happened and other things I've seen in other places related to school politics is the perception of threat. Like, you went to these meetings with a relatively small, relatively powerless, dare I say, compared to the teachers union group of people.
12 people versus about 90.
And just even introducing the idea that school budgets could be lower, school boards could have less power, you know, more power could be in the hands of the people, you know, allegedly.
I introduced the idea that the teachers should run the schools. I mean, that's what I'd like to see happen, ideally, because I think that when, you know, small government people come into these meetings, they're derided due to the idea that they want to cut the budgets. Well, look, how about this? How about you teachers could just run and own the school? We'll just give you the school. Just cede it to the teachers. All the property, the classrooms, the buses, everything, whatever school they're working for, whatever government school we're talking about, give it to the staff, not just the teachers, the janitors, the administrators. Give everybody an equal share in the operation and the ownership of the school, and then set them free of the government system and let them sink or swim as the market may dictate. Then they would truly be rewarded based on their abilities, and they would have full control over their curriculum. They wouldn't have any, you know, state or federal control at that point that would be telling them what to do. And of course, I was told my idea was illegal and out of order.
Well, that's an easy way to dismiss it, because your idea is a threat. Because remember, you're talking about schools now, but those people that you're talking to about your idea, they were schooled too. Mm-hmm. And their schooling didn't prepare them for that kind of independence or control or responsibility.
That's true.
It prepared them to fit themselves into a pre-existing machine at some point where they're at probably an insignificant level. Somebody will tell them what to do. Somebody will tell them how to do it.
Do your job.
Yeah.
And get a paycheck.
And unfortunately,
and then retire after 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, that's most people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, education, and there's other ones too, government work, police work, military work, psychiatry. These are obedient professions. And I think people overlook how much obedience there is. Mm. And it doesn't take many nefarious people to really screw things up, because almost everybody participating in these systems or these institutions is very obedient, and they don't ask a lot of questions of whoever is above them. I remember, I worked in a boarding school that I found out they were into all kinds of things that were questionable as my time there went on. But when I was, you know, 21 or 22 and new at that job, it was easy to just do what I was told. I didn't want to, you know, ask questions. I didn't want to rock the boat. Yeah, I figured, hey, if they're getting paid more than me and they're in a higher position and they've been here longer than me, that's three reasons why they know more than me and I shouldn't question them. And that was certainly reinforced, too. You know, and a lot of these types of institutions, private or public, not really encouraged to question the system. So
the toll-free number here tonight, if you'd like to add to the discussion, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We'll continue. I'm sure there's a little bit, because we kind of gone off on a tangent. Is there more about the homework thing?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
We're going to dig further into that also. We'll take your calls about anything. If you want, you may bring up whatever's on your mind here on Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE. Skype us at username lrn.fm. Plus, I've got some school, since we're on the topic, I've got some school-related stories. Yet another young teenage male is in trouble for having a knife in his car at school. And he's like a trained EMT as well. We're coming up. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You're invited to take control of the airwaves right here toll free at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And you can join us online. Just go to freetalklive.com, get interactive on the site. Lots of different ways to do that. We're going to continue here. Brett is here from School Sucks Project.
Hey.
SchoolSucksProject.com is the website. It is a radio show, podcast,
YouTube, forum.
Lots of community there. You've got a pretty decent community of listeners there.
Yeah. I just started one of these Facebook groups.
Ah. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great idea.
And is it something where anybody who's a fan of the show can join?
Yeah, it's an open group right now, you know, maybe around 300, and we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, we have a fan page that has like, you know, 6,000-something people on it, but...
And is the group linked to from schoolsucksproject.com?
Yes, but...
or if people search for
School Sucks Project on Facebook, you can find the group, and if you have something to say about the show or... the issue of education or the opposite, which is school, that's a good place to do it, because I know you guys have to deal with a lot of school horror stories on this show.
Sure.
We don't do that too much on my show anymore. We used to do it a lot back in the day, but if people have stuff they want to share, that would be a good place to do it.
Awesome. Very cool. SchoolSucksProject.com. We're going to go to the phones, and then we'll talk more about the homework issue here in a moment. But first, we go to Jason in Colorado Springs. You're on Free Talk Live. Jason.
Hi, Ann.
Hey.
Hi, Brett.
Hi, Jason.
What's on your mind tonight?
I want to know what Brett thinks, and also Ian, is the best strategy to privatize the public schools. I already agree that the homework is too much, so I don't want to talk about that. But what is the best strategy to privatize public schools into the free market?
Well, that's an interesting question. You mean from their existing form, using the same buildings and the same personnel, but doing what Ian talked about earlier, turning control over to the teachers themselves?
Well, I wouldn't use the term privatize, personally, because...
Dirty word these days.
Well, when you use the term privatize, it evokes certain preconceived notions. Like, for instance, when you talk about privatization, it usually means that some company... is brought in, some sort of politically favorable company who's buddy-buddy with enough politicians to make it their gig. They come in, they take over operation of whatever government service or product that we're talking about, and then in a lot of cases proceed to ruin it or you know, screw it up, and that way people can go, can point at that and say, see, you guys, this privatization stuff doesn't work. So I would keep away from that terminology. And if you're going to use anything, I think marketize might be a little bit better, but even then, that probably still has baggage attached to it. I would just stick to describing what the plan is. And I don't necessarily think Jason was going to propose what I was. In fact, he was just asking, I think, a question. But what do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I see it as, you know, there's a couple different, I guess, methods. You could devote to... defeat all school bonds, you could try to abolish the property tax, or you could try to take over the school board or some combination thereof.
Well, I think all of those actions to me sound a little bit forceful, and this goes back to the political conversation we were having in the previous segment. I think to see significant change in anything, you have to be able to win people over, and I think that's going to be a slow and gradual process. Mm-hmm. And I don't see myself as fighting the state or fighting public school or fighting the Federal Reserve. I think all those institutions are entirely unsustainable, and they'll take care of themselves. You know, I'm just trying to do what I think a lot of people are trying to do, is to show people what liberty looks like. And there's some people who, you know, come here or wherever they are, and they participate in counter economics. I talk about what I think real education is, and hopefully that will attract the people who want to learn more about real education and do it for themselves. I really don't care much what happens with the public schools. I hope that's not too much of a cop-out answer, but...
Well, I think it kind of is a cop-out answer. Because, look, I support what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I support talking about, you know, doing your own education at home, unschooling, homeschooling, alternatives to whatever the system is providing. I support all that. I support persuading people to remove their children from government schools and go with some sort of alternative. I think all those things are fine things to do. But even though, for instance, here in Keene, New Hampshire, there's a fairly large school system with approximately $63 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money for a town of 25,000 people.
Yeah.
With, you know, some of the people from outside of Keene. So probably it's more like 50,000 or something that may possibly be dealing with the school system. But it's still a fairly large amount of people. They spend around $14,000 or $15,000 per pupil, which is a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, I come from Florida where they were spending $7,000 per pupil.
Yeah, most private schools were probably about half that per pupil, too.
Private schools have a large range, but schools can definitely do it for less. They can definitely do it for less. So let's say you're successful with getting people to pull their kids out of the government school. Those are individual success stories, right? You're helping people. That's good for those kids. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But the government school system, they're actually admitting that their enrollments are down.
Yeah.
There are fewer people coming into the government school system, but yet the budgets continue to go up. So while you're right, Brent, that it is unsustainable for the future, I mean, the taxes here in Keene are ridiculous. I mean, it's the highest tax rate of all of the towns and cities in New Hampshire, as I understand it,
yeah.
If not one of the top two. It's up there. And it's not getting smaller. And the taxpayers, you know, they just keep shelling out. They don't know what to do about it because the kind of the teachers union and the people that work for the schools, they run the game. They come into all the political kind of arenas that they can, like this deliberative session that you referenced earlier, where we had about a dozen Liberty people show up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were significantly outnumbered by the teachers who were there, and they numbered in the 90s. So these people continue to vote for a larger system, and that those votes get passed on to all the tax-paying people. And unfortunately, we're not to the point where people who pay property taxes are ready to have a revolt. I mean, they're just not willing to put their house on the line, and most people can't because they're under a mortgage, and the mortgage demands that they pay all the taxes and follow all the laws. So how is that going to change? How is withdrawing people from the school system going to end the school system? One thing doesn't seem to be connected to the other.
Well, I know it's a cynical answer, but it's going to get darker before the dawn, you know, and and that's a fact. And you know, there's a lot of scary scenarios to contemplate, but I think what will probably happen in Keene, I'm just extrapolating from the observations of watching, you know, about an hour of the footage of this school board meeting that took place a few weeks ago. Government has one tool, right? The use of force, mm-hmm. essentially. I mean, that's their main tool. Maybe they have a couple auxiliary tools that go along with that, but government uses force. So when there's a problem, it's like, well, how can we raise taxes? How can we use more force to get more of what we need? The problem with the schools generally is like, oh, this doesn't work. How can we do it more of it more forcefully?
Mm-hmm.
So taxes in Keene, you know, are going up. That's my prediction for the years to come. And it's driving people out.
It's driving families away. It's driving the people that we need in Keene away from here.
And what I think is ultimately going to happen if that doesn't change, and I don't know how it changes, you're going to have a Detroitification.
Yeah.
Of a lot of
these. Well, look, Detroit's still got a pretty large government. I mean, there's a lot of people that have left Detroit, but their government's still going. I mean, they're still there, and they're still taxing people. Sure, there's people who've abandoned their homes, and they can't get tax money out of those homes anymore. So certainly their tax revenues are down, I'm sure, over the years. But the government's still going strong. The unions are still there, and they're still pushing to have the state exist. It's not like, you know, the loss of hundreds of thousands of people has actually destroyed the state in any way, shape, or form.
But what's happening in places like Detroit in the Midwest is government who clearly, you know, I mean, this is still going to take some time, I think, but government is appearing to be a lot more like a gang, you know, than in a place where everything is functioning better, you know, like, say, in New Hampshire.
Sure, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get the to have teachers appear as though they're a gang.
Well, I'm just saying that that's how people lose faith in government, by seeing it for what it really is. And yeah, that requires some darkness before the light, I think. So, I mean, I see this as a very long process.
Sure, sure. And politics is a long process, but I don't think it should be ignored. I mean, again, we're only talking about 100 people that went to this this deliberative session. All it would take would be 100 Liberty people to show up in Keene and get active inside the system, and you'd have a huge impact. So, Jason, the best answer from my perspective is to move to New Hampshire. Free Talk Live. We're launching into the second hour of the program. Still to come, more about homework. We just scratched the surface of the topic at the beginning of the last hour. We've been taking your phone calls since then. Of course, you can call in about anything that you want. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've also got Skype. You can Skype into the show at username lrn.fm. I'm Ian.
And I'm Brett.
Let's go back to the phones here, Brett. We've got Jason. He's still with us in Colorado. He hung through the break, I guess, so there's a little bit more. His question was about, you know, what can be done to end this oppressive, awful government education system. And Jason, you hung through the news there. Wanted to bring you back on. So what else did you have to share? Did we answer your question appropriately earlier?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to know what you thought about the methods that were available and how to organize, because I completely agree that over time it's all going to implode on itself. But for those of us that are a little more impatient than that, what is the best method to hasten the day that the schools don't get funded?
Yeah, because in the meantime, you have to pay for it. So me and my 200-year plan might be nice, but it's not helping you in the short term. Is that accurate?
Like the motto of the show, I want liberty in my lifetime. So, how do I get there? What do you think is the best way to do it?
Sheer numbers. I mean, it's gonna be a numbers game any way you shake it down. Brett's approach is a numbers game. My approach is all of those approaches. I'll do anything that I feel like can make a difference. So if I had children, I would not put them in the government schools. I think that's one of the most important things that you can do, and share that philosophy and these ideas with other parents and try to encourage them to do the right thing and get their kids out of the government schools. And that, I think, is, you know, and of course, the more people that pull out of the government schools, the more difficult it will be for them to make the argument that they need to increase budgets every year. I mean, they look bad in Keene when they are admitting on one hand that enrollments are down across the board, and then on the other hand, demand budget increases. That's a hard argument to make in front of the voters.
It's so funny, too. I just want to say this, that in 2010, at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, I had a conversation about this very subject with a group of activists. And the specific question was, how many people from one school district would we need to convince to withdraw their children and homeschool in order for the school not to be able to justify its budgets anymore? And, you know, I felt bad at the time because I was so cynical, and I threw up my hands and said they'd still find a way to do it. They'd say they need more money because people are leaving the schools, and they need more money to make the schools better, because that's why people are leaving.
Yeah, but they would do that. Yep.
That came true in Keene this year. So it's very, very frustrating. Like I said in an earlier segment, they only have one tool, and it's to force people to pay them more and more and more until that becomes unsustainable.
But if you could find 100 students that had parents that were willing to pull them out of the school system, you'd also have enough parents to go to any school board meeting and take over the meeting. So, I mean, again, both approaches that we're talking about here, sort of the outside the system and the inside the system approach, they both rely on numbers of people coming to these ideas and being willing to actually take steps towards achieving more freedom.
That's true. And we can only think about it on a small scale. Like, so maybe I was a little intimidated by your question at first, because I don't like to think like a central planner. I think that's a very dangerous way of thinking. But if we're talking about like a district by district, local level kind of approach, I have to agree with Ian and Daryl and Conan and the other people here in New Hampshire who participated in this effort that if there was 100 more people in that meeting sympathetic with, you know, the idea of taking power away from the school board and lowering the budget, it would have been a dramatically different outcome. And what does that mean? What would the recourse of the teachers of the city government be in that case? I don't know. Would they think of something forceful?
They'd probably try to sue or something
like that. Yeah. They would do something forceful.
In this case, our guys filed a suit because they went into this meeting and they arguably illegally changed the petitions that what had happened was one of the activists in the area, Conan, who was on the show Friday night for the first time, by the way, and I thought he did well. But anyway,
he was on with us.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
First time behind the mics here on Free Talk Live. He was the guy who wrote up these warrant articles, and he got 25 people to sign them, then submitted them to the school board. And then at the school board meeting where the 100 people were at that I was telling you about, they gutted those warrant articles and they completely made them null, essentially. They changed the wording to basically completely nullify those articles. And the argument that Daryl and Conan are making in their lawsuit, there's four activists who filed a lawsuit against the school board, is that this was illegal. And so I don't like the idea of feeding money into the system personally, but in this case, I did donate to the filing fee for this lawsuit. Because I thought it would be interesting to see what would happen. And secondly, I knew we'd get news coverage for it. So we've gotten two front page news articles about this in the local newspaper. And for me, I spent $100, which I was the largest donator to this particular lawsuit. I spent $100 donating towards that. $50 for a front page news article? I'll take that. That's an expensive piece of real estate. You want to try putting an advertisement on a front page of a newspaper?
It can't be done.
Spend a lot more than $50. So, Jason, to me, it's all about numbers. If you don't have numbers, you can't have success either in non-cooperation or in civil disobedience or in politics. So I would say New Hampshire's Free State Project really has the best chance. I don't know if you're familiar with the Bedford situation, Jason. Have you been following what's going on here at all?
No, I haven't.
So Bedford, New Hampshire. It's a town, kind of like a bedroom community just outside of Manchester. They had a school board election yesterday, as they did here in Keene. I was running for school board here in Keene. I got just over 5% of the vote. I actually didn't get last place. I beat the last place guy by about 50 votes, so I'm happy about that. I lost, but anyway, the guys over in Bedford, Free Staters, two Free Staters ran for the first time ever in Bedford. One ran for town council, another ran for school board. The political establishment freaked out about these guys. They attacked them on cable access television. They attacked them in an email that went out to, you know, thousands of email recipients from the Teachers Association or something like that. And they were attacked in a flyer, a full color, two-sided flyer, full page, that was mailed to every household in Bedford at a cost of thousands upon thousands of dollars for printing and mailing. And this flyer was an attack flyer. It was a hit piece against these two guys saying, vote for anyone but the Free Staters. Now, they lost, but they did get 20 to 24% of the vote in this election, their first time out. So, I mean, that was a pretty good election result. And to watch the people who are in support of the state just basically flip their lids and spend all this money to try to put a stop to these two newbies, basically, it was wonderful.
Whether we're talking about Keene or Bedford, and I said this before, but I'll say it again, even these people who are opposing your efforts here in Keene or Aaron Day's efforts in Bedford, New Hampshire, they know that you're pretty powerless compared to them. But the perception of threat just from these new ideas is very, very interesting. And what does it say about how they feel about their ideas, you know? Have you ever argued with a Republican about George Bush? You have. The man sitting across the table from me has. You ever argued with a liberal about Barack Obama? They know they're wrong. They know that something doesn't add up, right?
They got to stick with the party, though.
It's a religion. And I don't say that in a way. I know that sounds demeaning to religion. I don't mean it that way. What I mean is that people pretend that it's logical when it is entirely faith-based in both cases. And when you confront people on this, they get very angry. So there is like this devil that appears on my shoulder when I think about 100 activists showing up to a Keene school board meeting like, ha ha, I can't wait to see the look on their faces, you know, like all these teachers. And I don't like to think that way because that doesn't, you know, that doesn't make good things happen in my head. And I think that contributes, like being angry and resenting other people adds up to me being less free.
No, I agree.
Right,
you shouldn't
now.
Be angry. If you're right. If you're angry about activism, then you're not doing it right. Right. I think you need to be having fun. If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
I'm not, but let me ask a parting question before the break.
Okay, go.
Is there a larger audience for the repeal of the property tax than just the school issue? Because we know the property taxes fund schools.
Well, I think everybody hates property taxes. They just don't know what to. They don't know what you would do without them, right? Like, who would take care of the roads?
Right.
All those big questions
right.
come up. Jason, thanks for your call tonight, man. I appreciate it. There's more coming up here on Free Talk Live at 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live, take control of the airwaves. Toll free at 855-450-FREE. That is the Pro XPN toll free line, and you can join us online. Just go to freetalklive.com. You got some bitcoins? You want to send them our way? We have a Bitcoin tip jar. You can go to bitcoin.freetalklive.com. You'll find the address for the Bitcoin tip jar there. You know, Brett, before we go on here, there are other people who are on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was important to talk a little bit further about the idea of anger. There was somebody who said something in the chat room, like, if you're not angry, you're ignorant or something like that.
You're asleep.
You're asleep. Okay. So it's a fairly common viewpoint in kind of the activist world that you got to get angry and you got to get out there.
Yeah.
And I think that anger is a phase that a lot of people go through, and it's an understandable phase. I've been through it.
Well, yeah, as Howard Beale said in the movie Network, that very famous line, if you're unfamiliar, you've probably seen clips of it somewhere, where this news anchor kind of goes nuts on the air and he says, first, you've got to get mad. Yeah, first.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all you want to be forever.
Right.
And you don't have to start there, but a lot of us do, and that's okay because, you know, we've kind of gone along most of our lives thinking everything is under control. And then I think we get to a point where like, wait a minute. Everything is under control, you know, and there's a lot of anger that comes from that. And because we feel like we've been lied to. We feel like we've been deceived.
And you have.
Yeah. And we absolutely have.
You've been lied to and stolen from.
Yep. Yep. And a lot
of people. Some cases abused, physically caged.
Yep.
There's
absolutely.
A lot to be angry about.
So anger first is natural, but it's no way to live.
No, it's an unhealthy place to be. It's not something that's going to attract good people to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that is going to persuade people to believe as you do. So I think that getting out of anger as quickly as you possibly can is a very valuable thing. By all means, stay as angry as you want to, as long as you want to, but don't expect to be particularly effective while you're doing it. I think that getting out of that anger, as soon as you realize you're angry, try to focus on more positive things. There's a lot to be excited about in the world as well. I mean, we've got wonderful communications technology today, and you know, the internet is really helping spread the ideas of freedom. The Free State Project is having an effect. I mean, there are a lot of things that are positive that you should be focusing on rather than focusing all the things that could make you angry. There's no shortage of those things.
No.
So you can get totally lost in that. And I've seen it happen to people I care about. And we've tried to have, you know, an intervention with one of those people in the past. And we lost him. I mean, he left as a result of his anger and some of the frustrations and the conspiracy theories.
Fear,
and all that.
Too.
The fear.
Fear,
yeah.
too.
Well, that's really kind of the basis of anger, isn't it, to some extent?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time. Yeah, absolutely. And
so,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's just what I wanted to get out there. I think anger is not useful. I mean, it's something that everybody experiences, but it's not useful for our purposes, which is to persuade people to change their minds and embrace the ideas of liberty.
Yeah, it's hard to look like one thing that I've been saying a lot on my show is that if you want these ideas to spread, you have to make people want what you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk around presenting yourself as a victim, which is part of it, right? Because that's where a lot of the anger comes from. I'm victimized by the state, that kind of thing. You don't look like somebody who other people are going to observe and say, oh, that's I want what that guy
yeah,
has.
Exactly.
Those handcuffs look so comfortable. You know, we should try to find what makes us happy within the realm of activism, what makes us experience, you know, success and energy and put as much of our effort. I mean, that's what I do anyway. This is the lesson that I learned. I guess I shouldn't tell other people what they should do. But I learned, like, what makes me look successful? What makes me look like a winner? How can I show that to other people? And that's where my effort goes. And hopefully that influences other people in a positive way.
Let's go to the phones. Your calls and thoughts here on Free Talk Live. The toll-free number, 855-450-FREE. Robert is in Dayton, Ohio. You're on Free Talk Live. Robert.
Hello.
Hey there.
I just want to say about the study at homework, I think I can understand where they're getting at about the whole study with homework stresses kids out.
That homework stresses kids out. Yeah, this is a news story, or a study that Brett had barely even begun to share with us. But go ahead with your thoughts, Robert.
I think it's kind of like elementary school. It's starting to look like college now with all the deadlines and all these homework after projects you have to complete to get good grades. You know what I mean? It's starting to look more like college.
In my opinion. Well, that's interesting. It seems like the demands that are being placed on kids generally are on the rise. And there's been a lot of criticism like that. But it's not like the work is getting any more challenging, especially with this new Common Core implementation in almost all 50 states at this point. It seems like this is the most out in the open that this what's often referred to as the dumbing down of America has ever been, this new curriculum that's being introduced. So it's interesting. It seems like it's actually going both ways. I recognize what you're saying, that there is more, maybe we could call it regimentation in elementary school, but
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Robert, thanks for sharing your thoughts tonight. Appreciate hearing from you. 855-450-FREE is the toll-free number. John is listening in Virginia Beach, Virginia. John, you're on Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up anything you want here toll-free at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. You can Skype into the show. Username is lrn.fm. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Brett.
Brett's here from the School Sucks Project. You can go to schoolsucksproject.com to get lots more of content. Great content from Brett and the gang, I guess. Jason Osborne's still on the show with you, yeah?
When we can get together and do it. We did some Liberty Forum interviews with Derek J. about some updates with him, Jeffrey Tucker, Carlos Morales. Yeah, I'm very excited.
He's going to be back in about 2 months. I'm pretty jazzed about that as well. So schoolsucksproject.com, go get more Brett there. And Brett, we started out the show tonight, and you kind of teased a story. We got off on a tangent, and then a bunch of phone calls came in. So we really haven't had a chance to dig in at all into a study that you found about homework.
Yes, absolutely. This is from reason.com. And the title of this piece, again, homework can turn your kid into a stressed out wreck, researchers say. So it's good that there's some backing for this. I'm going to roll it back a couple sentences, Ian, just to give people some context if they're just joining us. Despite the variety of public, private, and charter schools near me, all of the parents I know complain that their kids have too much damned homework. Now, when we complain to teachers and administrators, we'll be armed with research suggesting that professional educators are trying to turn our kids into socially stunted weirdos.
Hmm.
Yeah, really. A study published last year in the Journal of Experimental Education takes a dim view of the heavy workloads under which high school kids in the 10 high-performing high schools in upper-middle-class communities stagger. Results indicated that students in these schools average more than 3 hours of homework per night. That is so sad. 3 hours of homework a night.
I mean, they're in school for 8 hours a day, and of course you got to get up an hour and a half or whatever before school, get on the bus, and so how much time are you sitting on the bus, you know, and a good 30 minutes to 45 minutes on the bus in some cases. I mean, back one way, and so maybe an hour or 2 hours on the bus, depending on where you live. How the hell do you have time to do anything?
Right. Yeah, and the tone that it sets for the day, 5 days a week, too. Like, we talked about this on the show before. I think we did a 15 Habits for Success one time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I said I really like to do that really makes me feel better, maybe you're in the same kind of position, is to start a day slowly, if possible. You know, get up.
Take it easy.
Yeah, I don't know if you're a big coffee drinker.
I don't drink coffee.
I drink coffee. I like a cup in the morning. It's very nice. You know, get up, make that coffee. Go, and the first thing I do is I try to have good habits, so I don't go right to Facebook because that's chaos.
Yeah,
I look at my calendar. I look at Evernote, this program I use to stay organized.
Oh, yeah, I started using that, by the
great,
way.
Great. And I just kind of get the lay of the land in life. See what's going to, you know, get some stable ground to stand on. Sip the coffee.
That's smart. I usually go right to Facebook.
Vape a little bit. Sit back in my chair. Look out the window at the traffic going by. All these people going to work.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, nothing wrong with that. But I'm fortunate enough to have the situation where I work at home and I can give myself a slow start. And what a difference that makes in how you feel.
Sure.
Now, flash back to the 1990s when, I don't know if
you were in high school.
Your household was like mine, but mom is like, get out of bed. You got to go to school.
Right.
The bus is going to be here in 20 minutes.
I hated that.
Yeah. So the beginning of the day is frantic. You have no time to yourself. You're in a rush. What kind of a mood does that put you in for
not
the whole
so
day?
Great.
Then you spend 7 hours in school.
Which is awful. Generally awful.
You got to have an extracurricular for your college application. And then you come home, 3 hours of homework. And I, you know, the way I made my living before I was able to...
Was it that bad for you in the 90s, 3 hours? I don't feel
like
it was that
and
bad.
I didn't do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I always did my strategy in the, you know, towards the end of high school years was to do the homework because I never studied for tests and I would bomb usually a lot of the tests because first of all, when I would do the homework, I wouldn't actually read the book. So I would just kind of, you know... You'd look at the questions in the book and then try to go back and find the answers, but I've never once in my entire high school career actually ever read a textbook.
Yeah, you know the other thing that's interesting too, like you're just a couple years younger than me, I think, but
yeah,
it might
I'm 33
be
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. So it might just be the couple years that makes the difference, right? Because high school was way harder for me than college because when I got to college, suddenly the internet was there. You know, so you probably got to enjoy a couple years of that in high school when it might have been easier to find some things. It was a primitive internet.
It was pretty primitive.
It was pretty primitive. But I remember just like
there was no Wikipedia back then.
There was no Wikipedia,
the
right? And there was probably not even anything like Spark Notes back then. But none of the teachers knew about it at that point for sure, because most of my college professors were in their 50s. And when the internet was new, I just remember being able to research things online, get answers to questions, and it made college much easier than high school, which was such drudgery. I never did 3 hours of homework because I was a bad student. That's what they told me.
I managed to pass without doing any like reading of the textbooks and studying for tests. But so for me, like if I did homework, it would help bring my grades up to where I wouldn't totally, you know, bomb.
Sure. And, you know, I do understand just on another note, too, because I don't want to glamorize being a bad student. If you are going to stay in school, you know, and if you are going to get a high school diploma, you might as well do the best you can, because I will say this. I will agree with what my parents told me when I was 16, that I probably would have had more opportunities, you know, as far as college was concerned, if I had done better in high school.
Yeah,
so,
but what good is college?
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I forgot about it. Never mind.
College seems like a total waste of money to me, and I wish I could have the time back personally, because you want to talk about being harried. I mean, when you're in college, at least I wasn't falling asleep on the way to school. I mean, when I finally got off the school bus and was able to drive myself to school, I wasn't ever falling asleep on the way to high school, but I sure did a couple times on the way to college because I was working. And going to college, was working two jobs in college and going to college, and it was just exhausting.
Well, my real answer to your question, and this is what I told my 13-year-old nephew, who is also struggling in school, much to the chagrin of all the adults who were listening to what I had to say, I said, yeah, you know, school is BS, and you would be better off you know, getting a job, being an entrepreneur, at least getting out and doing something, learning a skill, because you're not going to do it there. But if you're going to stay in school, if you're going to stick it out in school, because you want to go to college, you should try to get into the best college possible. Like, if you can get into Brown University, if you can get into Harvard, not that those places aren't soul-sucking in their own right in many aspects, but if that's the only college that's worth something, or unless you're graduating from college with, you know, a very usable mechanical or electrical engineering degree, something like that, college either needs to have a very specific purpose or it needs to be an A-plus school. So that's,
yeah, you've got to know why you're going to college. Your
yes.
reason for going to college shouldn't be because everyone's doing it, or because your parents said you should, or because everyone in school says that's the right thing to do. You should have a very specific plan and goal that you would want to accomplish.
Absolutely.
A career path in mind, etc. A lot of people go to college and they have no idea why. They're just there because that's the reason they're supposed to be there, is because they've been told they're supposed to be there and they don't know what they want to do. They change their major two or three times in the time that they're in college and basically waste a bunch of money and time.
Yeah, it's an expensive exploration.
It's really sad. So yeah. More with the homework, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So last sentence. Results indicated that students in these schools average more than 3 hours of homework per night. Students who did more hours of homework experienced greater behavioral engagement in school, but also more academic stress, physical health problems, and lack of balance in their lives. No kidding. How could there be any balance? You know,
that's all school. School. You eat, sleep, and breathe it. That's terrible.
Yeah, church on Sunday. Because kids get homework on the weekend, too.
That's right, yeah.
And
projects.
I made my living for a long time as a tutor, right? So I was always trying to do SAT tutoring. Mm-hmm. I gave up on academic tutoring because you're just like an enforcer for the school, and it's really
gross.
Terrible. But trying to wedge myself in sometime during the week, like making a schedule for the whole week with all these, like if I had 10 clients at the same time, was so difficult because none of the kids had any free time. You know, they were just being moved from one place to another, school or extracurricular or homework or band or something like
that. But parents have believed this is necessary,
yes.
That this is the way it's supposed to be. You're saying this study has found differently. We'll get into more here in moments. Our toll-free number, if you want to share your experience, maybe you're currently in school and you can say, yes, this is really the load of homework that we're having. 855-450-FREE. You can take control here on Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want right here, toll-free, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. You can Skype into the show at username lrn.fm. So feel free to reach us in that way if you prefer. We're going to continue here on the topic that we have about homework. In fact, we've got some people that would like to discuss that very topic on Skype. 855-450-FREE is, again, the toll-free number. Our Skype username, lrn.fm. Let's go to Skype, where Matthew is on the line with us in Connecticut. You're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Brett. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. I wanted to tell you that you're absolutely right. I'm actually in the middle of my approximately 3 hours of homework right now. So.
And you're going to a government high school?
Yeah, that's correct.
What is the 3 hours? I mean, which classes are we talking about? What are the assignments? What are you doing tonight?
Tonight I'm doing a chemistry lab write-up that's actually one day late, so I can only get partial credit for it, so it's kind of demoralizing. And yeah. I'm also doing, I have to do some English homework. I have to read Hamlet, which I don't know.
Oh, God. I hated Shakespeare.
Yep, I agree with Ian. Shakespeare is awful.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, like our teacher told us that, like, you know, the whole to be or not to be speech was, like, you know, the most profound thing in English literature. And she went on and on about that. And, you know, it's just about suicide. And I asked her, you know, couldn't any teenager make the same sort of complaint to their parents or whatever and you know, in their own vernacular? I don't know. She thought that was a good question. But yeah, I don't really like it. I mean, the whole idea of having to read assigned books, like I read my own literature. I don't want to have to be bothered with that, you know? I mean, if I was interested in it, I would take it upon myself to go read Shakespeare if I saw some value in it, you know?
Yeah, I just remember, I guess I shouldn't apply the blanket statement that Shakespeare is awful, because I guess I'm in the minority on that opinion. He's, you know...
It's awful to read. I can't handle it.
When I was 14, it wasn't empowering to read that. You can barely understand the language. And, you know, if there was...
You feel dumb.
Yeah, if there was a course in Shakespeare where you go through the grammar of Old English... And you learn what all these words mean, and then you're empowered to read Shakespeare instead of just like, you know, passing or going up and down the rows in your English class and stumbling through whatever the reading is. Like, we would go around and read out loud. So it took something that certainly has a lot of merit as art. I mean, Shakespeare or whoever wrote those books. I'm not being a conspiracy theorist. I'm just saying there's theories that other people that stuff. Whoever wrote that, they were certainly pioneering a style that has been replicated and copied and praised endlessly in Western culture. So I'm not going to say that it's valueless, but to force it on 14-year-olds, or how old are you, Matt?
I'm 16. I'm a junior.
Yeah. So when were you introduced to it?
Well, I read Othello in eighth grade. That was my first Shakespeare, and I was only 13.
Yeah. So 13, 14, I think, is when most people are introduced to it. So that's chemistry and English. What else you got going on?
I have, a math class. It's actually not – I'm taking pre-calculus, honors, and discrete math. And I have some discrete math homework, which is just this weird, like, sort of statistics-like math class. And I just have – about an hour of that.
So when did you get home today from school? When did you start on the homework, and when do you feel like you're going to be done with it?
I got home. School ends at 2 p.m. I get home around 2:30, like a half hour on the bus, and I just take a nap instantly. Like, I only get maybe like five hours of sleep, six if I'm lucky, each night. So I usually just sleep right when I get home. But
right, what time are you waking up for school? Like 5:30, 6 o'clock?
5:45.
You ought to tell somebody you need about 9 hours of sleep. So I don't, you know, I'm half kidding, but talk to mom, talk to the teachers, say I need 4 more hours of sleep, because, you know, at your age and in your activity level, I'm sorry, you know, it seems like you're getting kind of worn down. Do you feel that way? Or
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it I don't know if the sleep has a lot to do with it, but I was going to bring up, I kind of disagree with what you said about, like, if you're going to go to school and you're going to be there anyway, maybe you have parents that don't agree with, like, homeschooling philosophy or whatever, and you have to be there, that you should just do the best you can. Like, I kind of disagree with that. You should just do the best you
can. Yeah, please tell me why. Please tell me why.
Okay. This is why, because I don't think it's that simple. At least in my experience, it's not. It's you know, when I go to school, when you read things, and I don't think every teenager has, but when you read things like Civil Disobedience and Walden, and perhaps like Edison or Ben Franklin's autobiography, and you're exposed to some kind of like literature or media, and you understand that childhood can be, or just, I don't know, life in general, it doesn't have to be working your way or struggling through some institution's, you know, force or whatever, then it becomes exceedingly difficult to comply on a daily basis with all this stuff. Like, you know, having a routine, even if it's not the worst, you know, I mean, even if it's just in a warm building and you're just going from classroom to classroom, seat to seat, and it's not like torture. I mean, it's like it's psychological, I don't know, torture, whatever, but it becomes extremely hard just to sit there and listen to what the teacher is saying. Like, it's just, you know, it's just so demoralizing. I mean, it's not like you can be like, you can rationalize in your head. It's not as easy as just rationalizing, like, oh, I'm going to be here anyway.
Yeah.
Let's just get A's, you know? It's a lot of working through a lot of other, you know, psychological factors, and I don't know, it's very complicated.
It's a rock and a hard place, and I don't know how long you've been listening, but I do a show called School Sucks Podcast. I was a teacher for a number of years. Our website is schoolsucksproject.com, and one of the messages that I wanted people like you to get is you know, to be able to hear from an adult who has been on the other side of the classroom that what you feel is right. You're not defective for feeling the way you do. Nothing is wrong with somebody like you for feeling this way or observing these things. You are absolutely right. The adults who are telling you something else are kidding themselves, because a lot of the time, I think, you know, we as adults don't want to look back and face what was done to us. that we were lied to, that we were deceived, that we were forced to do things we don't want to do.
There's a rationalization that happens, right?
Yeah.
I mean, around here, there's some critics of the school system. The Liberty community is very critical of the school system. But the people who support the system will say things like, well, I went to the government schools and I turned out fine.
Yes, yes, right.
And from their perspective, they did. You know, they're able to pay the rent. They're taking care of themselves and their families. And, you know, they feel like, how dare you attack this system? It did good for me.
But that's you understand, Ian, that that's a mantra that they're doing. That's self-talk that they're engaging in because they – who could argue with the idea that school sucks or that the schools don't work? Like, everybody knows that. You know, and that's why I do the show, because it attracts young people who are already sold on the idea that school sucks to the ideas of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if people really think about it, I think are really capable of being honest with themselves, aside from, you know, some true believers and maybe very committed teachers. Everybody knows, you know, we have forced associations and we have voluntary associations and activities. You can tell the difference because the things that you choose to do voluntarily give you satisfaction. And the things that you're forced to do are an imposition and, you know, we don't enjoy them and they make us upset.
Hey, Matthew, great call tonight, man. Appreciate. You want me to keep him?
Yeah, right. Keep him.
You want to stick around, Matthew?
Sure, yeah.
All right, hang
That'd
on, man.
Great.
We'll bring you back here in a moment. 855-450-FREE. Seems like a sharp kid. More on the way here. You can take control here on Free Talk Live. Skype username is lrn.fm. We'll continue in moments. Amplifiers new and old, we want to thank you.
We have enough pledges to make us feel comfortable that we can continue to partner with Daryl to do affiliate relations for Free Talk Live.
Daryl has been a tremendous asset to the FTL team. Just to give you a clue, in the first 3 months he was working with me, we called every talk station in the country that we knew of.
They even found a few they didn't know of.
That's more than 800 stations. It's the first time that Free Talk Live has done anything like that. We are confident that the affiliate relations is on track to be very successful, thanks to Free Talk Live amplifiers.
Thanks, amplifiers.
Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want here toll free at 855-450-FREE. We've been talking about homework, however,
yes.
And how it's incredibly damaging, apparently, according to one study, to young people in the not just government schools, but private schools as well, because there are a lot of schools that have this idea that homework is this valuable thing that instead could end up really stressing young people out and causing some damage.
I think it's a problem that originates in the public school, certainly, because the philosophy is when things don't work, try more of them harder. You know, I mean, that's pretty much a government method of solving problems, right? Don't go back, don't examine the roots of a problem, you know, don't look at individuals, just give them more work more frequently. There's lots of talk about, you know, extending school years and all that. So
yeah, we were talking about how it's apparently 3 hours a night is what is typically assigned for homework these days, and that doesn't allow anyone who's a student to have any time to develop any sort of other interests besides taking care of the requirements of the classroom.
Yeah.
So you can't – what we've seen examples here and there of young people who've been able to have the time, maybe because they're homeschooled or unschooled or something like that, but have had the time to create their own businesses, to be entrepreneurs, and to innovate and come up with new ideas. You're not innovating in a classroom. You're just doing whatever it is that you're assigned to do.
Right.
There's no, you know, there's no novelty to that. You're just doing what the same group of kids did that same time of year last year. You're treading over the same ground. But when we see young people having the freedom to innovate and be entrepreneurial and create their own, you know, businesses or ideas or inventions, we see all kinds of really creative stuff come up because these young people, they haven't been beaten down as much as adults. They haven't been – I mean, that's kind of the process of going to school is beating young people into becoming obedient serfs when they finally get out. But generally, young people, they're not as restricted in their mindset as older people who've been programmed for their whole life kind of by this system. So they're able to think outside of the box and come up with neat ideas. And so I think that that's one of the real tragedies here is the unseen, right? Like we know that students are supposed to spend all this time on homework, and that's supposedly a good thing for them. But really, what would be best is if they had the time and the freedom to find out what was really right for them, to find the areas of life that they think are most interesting and exciting and focus in that and see what grows out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about so much time of every day filled that it's risking their own identity. Pretty much in a lot
right,
of
they're
cases.
Just a student
yeah.
at that point.
Yeah.
You know, there's a really neat idea that one of our listeners has come up with. It is imagine this. It's being able to spend your Bitcoins with a credit card through a completely decentralized non-bank system. You swipe and Bitcoin is removed from your Bitcoin wallet, meaning that Bitcoin would then be just as easy to use as money in the meat space world. If this technology sounds awesome to you and you feel like it might be worth checking out as a possible investment, Temper, who's the guy behind this, is looking for investors, and you can help him by going to his Indiegogo campaign at mybtc.cc. That's mybtc.cc. So let's go back to Matthew. He's still on the line with us here. You wanted to hang on to him. He seems like a real bright guy at age 16 in the government school system. He's been explaining to us his homework load, some of the ridiculous stuff that he's being asked to do. But Brett, what else did you want to say?
Well, I just wanted to make sure, Matthew, you felt like you were heard. I know I had some things to say, and I think you raised a really good point that there is obviously not just more detail, but you are kind of between a rock and a hard place, right? When you start to realize that, some of the problems with school, but you don't feel like for one reason or another, parents, other circumstances, that you could just leave school. And I think there's a lot of people who are in the same position as you, and then it becomes a question of school survival. So am I capturing it correctly? Do you have friends, people you can talk to who have a similar mindset or find themselves in a similar position?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do agree that it becomes a question of school survival, having to survive in that environment daily. And my friends, they don't feel as strongly about it as I do, I think. I mean, I have a libertarian friend who I talk about it sometimes, but he's still, he's in like AP classes still, and he still seems pretty content and stuff. I don't know. I feel that like I'm probably one of the most, dissatisfied or daily, reminded of it daily of my friends. But, some of them feel similarly. They don't really, I don't know. It's not like as big a deal to them. They're more compliant.
Have you ever gotten any pushback or like explicit disagreement with some of your friends, like, oh no, Matthew, you're wrong. It's so important, and it's even great.
Yeah, I have. I made friends, especially in middle school, with a lot of the top students. Because I'm very interested in academia and things like reading and stuff. So actually, I would tend to the nerdy kids, the kids who get really good grades. When I talk to them about it, they are absolutely fine. And they're like, whatever. I mean, they like going to class. They are very emotionally invested in what the teacher has to say to them about them and stuff. I feel that that's really a big deal to them. They'll argue with me saying, that it's justified. It's perfectly fine. Like, don't make, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I ask is because in the last segment, I made this blanket statement like everybody knows school sucks. And that's not true, obviously. Right. And
I don't think it's true.
Yeah. The more we thought about it, the more exceptions to my rule we could probably find. So,
I think a lot of kids just accept it, even if they don't embrace it. Like, some kids embrace it that are, they're at the top of the class or whatever. And, some of the kids at the top of the class really embrace it and really get into it. A large majority, I feel, are very like oblivious to the fact that it's okay to say or even think about not going to school, or that it's wrong, or what's going on there is wrong, because you're just taught like doing your work, and like that's your daily achievement. Like, even if I didn't like it, or if I got distracted talking to my friend, oh, I did some work and that was good, and you get rewarded even monetarily sometimes by your parents. And there's so many things that make kids feel that it's a good thing that they don't even bother to question it. They wouldn't even think of questioning it. I mean, I think that there's maybe a smaller population of kids that are dissatisfied with it than you initially stated, or at least that's in my school, at least in my experience.
Where are you in Connecticut? Because that actually matters.
South Windsor.
Oh, okay.
What is that, like a fancy area or what?
South Windsor. It's a suburb of. Could we call it a suburb of Hartford? It's a little ways from Hartford, but
right. Yeah, it's near Hartford. Yeah, it's a suburb. Yeah.
I mean, most of Connecticut. I mean, Connecticut is either you're either rich or you live in the hood. I mean, it really is the income disparity in that state is pretty extreme. And obviously there is some middle class there, but it is, I think, probably the most significant income disparity in the country last I saw. So, you know, there's a lot of money and there's and that translates to, from my experience working in Massachusetts, which is very similar to Connecticut, a lot of competition and a lot of keeping up with the Joneses.
Well, I know that when I was in school, I didn't think it was very great. I mean, most of the people I knew thought school sucked. But then again, I didn't run with the goody two-shoes crowd. So I'm sure they would have had a different perspective.
Yeah. And I'm really happy that you're out there, Matthew, because, you know, you're thinking for yourself. It's clear that you have, you know, some kind of identity of your own. You're asking these questions. And it's encouraging for me, even if you provide information contrary to things I, you know, push on my show frequently. I'm happy to get the feedback. And I think you made some really good points about, yeah, it's not just as black and white. If you're going to stay in school, you know, might as well get all A's and go to Brown University, because not everybody has that option. And, you know, there is a site in schoolsurvival.net that has a lot of good resources, too. Might be worth checking out. And
Matthew, thank you, by the way. Anything else you want to share with us tonight?
Just please wish me luck tomorrow.
Good luck.
Good
Thanks
luck,
for the
sir.
Call tonight. Appreciate hearing from you. Of course, you may call in our toll-free number, 855-450-FREE. We've got Nathan in Texas, also on Skype. Go ahead, Nathan.
I was curious about the last caller. He's studying Shakespeare, is that right?
He is, as almost everyone is forced to study in government high school.
Well, I had a few things to say about that, and I wanted to ask Brett about what his philosophy is on what should be taught in school.
Stand by, we'll get to that discussion here in moments. Shakespeare and philosophy of teaching, all on the way here in the remaining moments of Free Talk Live, which are coming up next. 855-453 is the toll-free number. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, you can bring up what you want. Even in these remaining moments, there's enough time for you and your thoughts at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Our Skype username is lrn.fm, and we're going to go back to Skype, but also want to remind you to check out Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. We talked briefly that Derek J is coming back to New Hampshire. His two-year suspended sentence will be up in May, and he's very excited about returning to New Hampshire and being part of the Free State Project again, because, you know, it's just a depressing thing living in Philadelphia, which is where he currently lives, and from what I'm told, he's been having kind of a tough time.
Yeah,
there because there's no chance for freedom to succeed in a place like that. You look confused, Brett.
In the birthplace of liberty?
No, I'm
Philadelphia?
Afraid not. Big cities are just not a place where freedom is going to blossom. But here in New Hampshire, it can. You want to check out Derek J's story and a great real telling of some of the activism that went on here in Keene, New Hampshire over about a year's period of time. Back in 2011, we turned it into a feature-length documentary film. You can go to victimlesscrimespree.com and you can watch the entire thing in its, the full film on YouTube. You can also grab it on DVD. The director's cut version of the film is available on DVD, and I highly recommend it. It's free, so go and check it out at victimlesscrimespree.com. Nathan is back with us, calling from Texas on Skype. Nathan, are you there?
I am.
All right. So what was it that you left us with a moment ago?
So first on Shakespeare, I'm not the best person to defend Shakespeare. I'm not a literature major or anything like that. I mean, I've just read some of his plays and really enjoyed them. And I mean, the guy really was brilliant. There's a reason he's called the greatest playwright in the English language.
No objection, by the way, just no objection to anything you've said so far.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good writer for sure. I mean, as far as the plot of the stories, I mean, they're entertaining, and there's a reason why they've held for so long.
And it's been copied endlessly.
It's just impossible to read it. I mean, if you're just the average person, I tried reading some Shakespeare as an adult. and I had to have the dictionary tooltip installed, which is a neat little browser plugin where you can double click on words and it comes up with the definition for them. I never would have gotten through that through any of it if I couldn't like look up words literally every sentence. A lot of times I could infer sort of what the word meant based on the context in the sentence, but man, it was difficult reading. It was like a slog reading through that. It was horrifying.
Well, we might have had different experiences because when I was in high school, we didn't do the I guess that what that caller was saying, you sit there and stand up and read a passage from Shakespeare. We read, you know, we had these textbooks that had annotations in the columns, like you say, every few paragraphs to tell you what it tell you what an unfamiliar word might mean.
That's handy.
And then we watched movies you know, about Shakespeare, and you know, so we'd see a movie about Romeo and Juliet while reading the you know, we watched West Side Story for example.
Indeed, fantastic movie based off Romeo and Juliet.
So those really that kind of style really helps to understand it, I think, as opposed to just, you know, standing up and reading passages like from the Bible or something.
Now, you had a question for Brett?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, Nathan, I'll tell you a secret. It might hurt my anti-Shakespeare cred a little bit, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Okay. Last Shakespeare play I read was Julius Caesar, and I was either 33 or 34 years old at the time. So it wasn't that long ago, and I enjoyed it. And the secret was I did it voluntarily, which is a magic world of difference than being forced to do something. So is Shakespeare great? Is most of his work great? Is it really important literary contributions to the Western world and beyond? No doubt. I don't even think that's debatable. But when you force people to do it, you know, that can take the joy out of anything.
Well, I guess that leads into my next question, which is about what you think children should or shouldn't learn in a free system versus the current coercive system, because I have to admit, I feel a little troubled sometimes by some of the things I've heard you and Ian say. Like, I mean, I understand algebra is not something everyone needs to learn, for example, but,
sure.
You know, some people need to learn it. If you're going to be a chemist or a physicist, you need to learn it. And I just get a vibe sometimes from you, and I guess not from any one particular person, but from libertarians in general, I kind of get this vibe of, oh, well, all that fancy, you know, math and science and literature, you know, we don't need that.
Fancy math and science.
Yeah.
I get what you mean. I certainly understand that. One of my biggest criticisms of school is that people are not taught how to learn. They're taught how to sponge up information.
And then promptly forget it later.
Yeah, and then they jettison that information when they don't need it for tests anymore. And I have asked, you know, I used to do these SAT classes that were as big as 40 kids sometimes, and I would always ask the same question, how do you learn vocabulary? They would all tell me the same thing. They would get a list of unrelated words at the beginning of the week. They would cram for a quiz on Friday, and then they would forget what all the words meant. And you see these people in these SAT classes when you're preparing for, you know, the verbal portion of the test, and they're all writhing like, oh, I've heard that word before, but I forget it. It was a vocabulary word once. But they're not taught like Latin roots, you know, so they're not given a foundation of education. You know, they're just force-fed information and then barf it onto a quiz and then just repeat. And that's not learning. So I try not to use the word should, right? When we're talking about, you know, things being done in a voluntary way, I've tried. I still use it all the time, but I am making an active effort to take the word should out of my vocabulary. But I believe that students benefit from learning critical thinking skills, like the trivium method, from learning the grammar of whatever language they speak. You know, like, what does bio mean? What does auto mean? What does D, in, ab? What do all those things mean? Because then you're able to figure out, you know, you see a word like intransigence, right? But if you know what in does in a word, you know what trans does in a word, you might be able to get a meaning just from knowing the parts of the word. But no one's taught language that way. So no one's taught how to learn, and no one's taught to be intellectually self-sufficient. We have to also, ironically, learn that on our own. So I don't like the word should when it comes to the education of young people, but there are things that I think are valuable that I try to, on my show, encourage people to either pursue for themselves or teach to their children.
Well, I guess I agree with what you said about the cramming. In fact, there's research out there that shows that cramming is one of the worst ways to learn something because you only recall it for a short time. But I guess maybe I could rephrase the question. In a free society, what do you think most parents would want their children to learn? Do you think they would demand advanced organic chemistry of 10-year-olds? I mean, how do you think that would go?
I think it would be every set of parents would have a different set of standards. I mean, it would be the market would be responding to those demands and what parents thought was important. It's hard to really say what most parents would want because everyone's different, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very gradual transition too, Nathan, because remember, a lot of these parents are pretty schooled, right? And they kind of unquestioningly...
Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Right. It's not because they're dumb people, but, it's almost always, for me, a problem that stems from the number one lesson of government school, which is obedience. Number two is conformity. Number three is apathy, if you want to know all three. But people just, they say, oh, you're the expert? Oh, my goodness, look at you. You're on TV. You wrote an article for the newspaper? My goodness, who am I to, disagree? And that's obviously like an internal dialogue a lot of the time, but people put too much faith in authority. And a lot of times people get into those positions of authority, whether we're talking about local school board or the highest seats in academia or in government, because they want to control other people.
So true. Nathan, thanks for the call tonight. Let's go to Dave in Nevada on the amp lines. Hello, Dave.
Hey, guys. Great show today, by the way.
Go ahead, sir.
Keeping with the whole school theme, I heard earlier somebody mentioned Common Core. And I think as bad as, schools are, that with Common Core, it makes it even worse because basically you have the federalization of school standards now, and they say, oh, well, the states, put the standards together and adopted it. But basically they blackmail the states into doing it and say, through that stimulus package, yeah, if you guys adopt these standards, we're going to give you all this money.
Well, it's blackmail is a strong word. And just what I usually say is, they say, hey, you want some money, states? The federal government does this, and we've seen them do this in law enforcement, right? They get people to have these DWI programs by promising local police departments all this cool tech. So the Federal Department of Education says to the State Department of Education, hey, you guys looking for more money? Government's always looking for more money. So then they say, well, there's some strings attached, and the strings always turn out to be these chains that you're talking about.
I've heard that the federal government provides 6% on average of any government school's operating budget, but also controls
almost
like
all
90%.
The control.
Hey, thanks for the call, Dave. We're out of time for tonight. Check more Brett out over at schoolsucksproject.com and more Free Talk Live tomorrow night. FreeTalkLive.com.